Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com. Welcome to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight, Bill Arnold. On this side of the studio and just across the way, George P. Fraser, a man with a pretty good memory, I must say. He can remember the last time he made a pillow fort, which was only like 2 weeks ago. Hello, George.
Forgot my haircut appointment this week.
Did you?
It was at 10, I thought it was 10:45. It was 10.
Okay.
But they're still letting me drive, so that's encouraging.
You did the right thing, though. You paid your stylist.
Well, she did what she said she was going to do.
Of course. She showed up, and she did the right thing, and you just completely missed it.
Yep.
Yeah. And did you include a generous tip as well?
I did.
That was nice of you, George.
Yep. Dollar.
Yeah. You're a good man, George Fraser.
I am good. Hey, it's good to see you tonight.
Or today.
And looking forward to this show. I think it's going to be really good.
You know, addiction is a habit. This is what we talk about in Real Recovery, was people who struggle with addictions. And it's a habit that's taken control over you. And you have little or no control. And you think to yourself, how do I deal with this? You're unable to break the habit. So maybe you have pain in your inner self. Maybe you've got hurt, you've got pain, and it's not dealt with. There's one of the causes of addiction, George.
Well, I think we get addicted because it works. And the first time you get high, you talk to a lot of guys that are addicts. You go, you remember the first time I get high? Yes, I do. I had that warm feeling. And a lot of people will tell us they felt normal for the first time. I can remember the first time for me. That fourth 16-ounce Colt 45, it was warm. I was 15. And big day that day. And the fourth one went down, and I felt normal for the first time in my life. Okay. Got really sick afterwards because I had a couple more. But I knew that I would be doing that again.
Yeah.
And what happens is we find the feeling, and then we seek the feeling. And after that, the addiction process goes on its way. But I think I was pretty well addicted from the first time because I wanted to do it whenever I could.
Yeah.
And that's a story we hear a lot, Bill.
Uh-huh. George, did you have pain in your inside your heart? Did you have hurt, or did you just have an appetite for pleasure, or both?
Totally. I was kind of a weird kid, and I know being a weird adult is not a stretch.
Yeah, it's
but
not
I
at
was
all.
Always addicted to more. I always thought that no matter how good it was, I could make it better. You know what I mean? Put the cherry on top of the sundae. And that got me into a lot of trouble. But I would think I was addicted to sugar, first of all. Get up in the morning, give your kid some hot chocolate with the Captain Crunch, put him in front of the TV. And I liked excitement. Everyday life kind of bored me. And I think for a lot of people, they can have anxiety, pain mentally, physically, socially anxious. And then the first time they use and they get that nice calm feeling where everything is going to be okay, the addiction is well on its way.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes there is pressure from peers or from kids that you're hanging out with because it starts young. You were 15, right?
I was 15. And you're right, Bill. A lot of people way back 30, 40 years ago, got hooked on cigarettes because of that, because smoking was cool and it was rebellious. And then you get hooked on nicotine. We had what we called the gateway drugs. As you try them, like cigarettes, marijuana. I remember hearing how bad marijuana was for you and all that. And it didn't really come to fruition that it was bad. We'd laugh. We'd eat a lot, get the giggles, really had a good time hanging with the cool kids. And then that wasn't enough, so we started getting liquor delivered to our house because our mom was in the shower. And if you're smart enough to give the guy a $10 tip, capitalism, always been a big fan, he continues to bring it. And then you go from splitting a case with four guys to getting a keg. Sin and addiction mimic each other in that there's tolerance. So if you do four one time, you need to go to six after a while. And that's why people that we see, Bill, that we have on the show that are sex addicts will do some really risky behavior because it has to be more exciting than it was before, and eventually you get caught. And that's the way it is with sin, too, because I think when you're overusing chemicals, you are sinning, obviously, And then there's a withdrawal. When you stop, you miss it.
George, when you look at addictions, you know, we often focus on drugs and alcohol on the show, but you think of gambling or sexual abuse. You are, I know there's people that have chronic shopping issues, or they're dependent on having the boyfriend or the girlfriend. Maybe it's television, money, sugar, nicotine.
Work.
Credit.
I never
card.
Got that one, though.
No, I know you didn't. Credit card spending, overeating.
Gambling is a big one because it does that adrenaline surge, Bill.
Yep.
And we're looking to make something better. And it activates your brain. And we're going to get into that later in the show, how we can use that to build our recovery.
That's exciting. Little things like internet use of Facebook, Instagram.
Aren't you addicted to your phone?
Oh, for sure I am.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, but I look at it a lot during the day and at night. Right?
Well,
and you do too.
I'm hearing it, Carol. Let's talk about
it. Oh, don't give me that.
No.
Seriously.
I know I'm addicted to my phone because when I can't find it, I panic. And I think most people listening today, if you question how people could get addicted to something, look at your technology. Is it really hard for you to get through your Bible study before checking the news or checking X or something like that? I know for me it is that I can escalate through it so I can find out how the market's did. And that stimulation, we need that.
And what do you care about the markets? You've got your money in mayonnaise jars underneath your bed.
Well, I'm thinking about venturing in. I heard that Apple thing's doing pretty well.
Yeah, you're a little late to the game if you think Apple is your ticket.
Well, it's fallen like a knife off the table the last couple of days. But I think anything to get us out of our routine that will excite us and reward us and make us be able to relax and celebrate. And I think most people get addicted because it actually works, okay? You have a couple drinks when you get home from work, and it does take the edge off.
Okay.
And so then you go, well, three would be better. And the cycle is set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot easier to go have three cocktails than it is to work out at the gym for an hour.
Mm-hmm. But when we look at the all the common addictions, George, and again, tonight's show, I want to make sure we're covering as many bases as possible, because a lot of people that listen, they love testimonies of people with transformed and changed lives. And we love that, and I know people love hearing those testimonies, but there are plenty of people that have, I think, hidden addictions that they don't think it's a big deal. Maybe it's television, or it's talking.
I'm checking the boxes.
Church. You know, people who can be addicted to church.
Okay, I didn't get that one either.
Well, I mean, I've talked to kids that have said, you know, growing up, we did church on, you know, Wednesday night, Friday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night. And then they had all kinds of activity at church, and they felt like they were in over their head.
So when I would look at the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association for looking at classifications of disease, and that, what we always look at is the consequence. And for me, it's what harm is it doing for you? A lot of people can go home and have two cocktails when they drink, and that's it, and they're not going to have harm. But some people, they don't get the off button, like George F. here. And that's what we look at, Bill. And I think there can be positive addictions. We look at Dr. Glosser, who worked at the University of Minnesota in the 1970s, wrote a stellar book called Positive Addictions. And there's things that you can do, but we always look at what the harm is. And, Bill, I go to the book of James, and it's like we are enticed and carried away by our own lust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about fishing, like there's something very attractive there to a fish that he wants, and then he's hooked and carried away and dragged away. And that's how the addiction starts. And it can be shopping. It can be work. But what it does is it becomes a false idol. And we have to go back and go, our hearts are idol factories, right?
Yeah, they are.
And we have false gods. And I really think the only way you can get addicted is you're trying to get something that you want, you desire, that isn't God-centered, and that's where it starts. And so for Christians, and our lives should be different after we become a Christian, we need to look at, I think all Christians are in recovery, Bill, and we start off talking about addictions and problems. To me, my recovery from cocaine and alcohol is the same as my walk with Jesus. We get to talk about the recovery, and if you're a Christian, you don't have any addiction problems. Except maybe being mean to me 1 hour a week. I don't know if there's a program for that. But you walk a hard recovery.
Well, thank you, George. I mean, I've been doing that for like my whole life.
Right. But do you think that's kept you walking? I mean, the point I'm trying to get at is we have to try at this.
Oh, yeah. It's an effort. And it does. Regular, rigorous disciplines, routines, I think it just keeps you a little bit broken, a little bit humble, a little bit available. I mean, you serve with a lot of other men in recovery. You're available, George. So your program is such that you are ready and prepared to help others.
Well, thank you. I think the availability is really, I don't have that much going on, but I need to take it seriously. So if I asked you as a somebody going, Bill, you work your recovery as a Christian. Do you still need to do that? Because I hear that all the time about my drug addiction recovery. Do you still have to go to accountability groups? Do you still work the 12 steps? Are you still doing that? So for you, are you still doing it? Do you still have to do that? Or did you kind of get to a point where you can coast?
Well, I don't go to recovery groups.
But I mean, in your work. Recovery as a Christian.
No, you cannot coast.
Sure you can.
Really?
Well, you can, but is it going to work?
Oh, no, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of momentum in Christianity. I don't. You can leave a Bible study at 8 o'clock in the morning, and at 8:15, you're honking at some person on the highway, and you don't feel very Christ-like. So what happened to that Bible study and all the benefits of it?
Well, I think you got to give yourself some flack. If you're honking on the horn, you could be doing worse things at them.
So. That's true.
But there's no momentum. And I think when we read the Bible, Bill, and it says that every day we have to pick up our cross and deny ourselves, why do I think that doesn't apply to me? That apart from God, I can do nothing. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But why do I go, hey, I'll take it from here? And coming out of church or the Bible study, are great examples of that. Or mm-hmm. driving home after doing this show.
Yeah.
I have to be on constant vigilance so Jesus shows up instead of George.
Yeah, right. George, I want to talk a little bit before we go to break on some terms of addiction, because I think we throw terms out, and I don't know if people fully understand. Like when you hear the word insane, that's, where is that, step two?
Yeah.
Or step one?
Well, it's implied in step two, the return to sanity. I've never had a problem with insanity because I've been there. No, I'm okay. Serious.
Yeah.
I think any time you go against God's word, that's insanity.
I do too. But it's out of control behavior, and that is pretty much doing the same thing over and over, right? And hoping one day you'll get a different result.
Well,
that's insane.
Best definition I've heard on insanity, that one is quite good, is I know this isn't going to work, but I'm going to do it anyway.
That's pretty insane.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. Now, would you say that the word drunk, does that apply to all forms of out-of-control behavior, if you hear that word drunk?
Hold on. Do you want me to just kill the show by thinking about this?
No. Is that a generic term or is that a very specific term?
I always think of a guy who had too much to drink that is kind of incapacitated.
Okay. All right.
But you can be drunk with power.
You can.
Drunk for money.
Yep. Drunk with achievement. Drunk with, control. All kinds of things. Those are addictive behaviors.
I mean, in Scripture talks about do not get drunk with wine, but is it high with the Spirit or that's probably my word.
Yeah.
I get a lot of letters on that. Be filled with the Spirit. I think we can be intoxicated with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back from the break, that's what we should talk about.
Yeah, we should talk definitely, George, about the accountability in the believer's life because we all have it.
Yes,
we all should. Right. You are listening to... George, what's the name of the show again?
Real Recovery. It's on Saturdays and Sundays.
Yeah.
Depends on where you live. We're all over the country.
World.
award-winning show.
Yes. We've got trophy cases that we've
I've never seen
about.
Them. Did they?
Well, I haven't either, but they're okay. Out there, apparently. Yeah. Apparently.
I want to get my trophies in heaven. I got a punt, pass, and kick one, and
I know
that's
you do.
It.
You got that when you're 9 years old. We're going to take a break. When we come back, lots more Real Recovery. We're going to talk about accountability in the believer's life. Be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George. Ryan's on the board tonight, and we are wanting to discuss in this segment the accountability in a believer's life. We can't go do this by ourselves, George. This can't be something you try to do and go alone. It's essential that we do it in community.
Yeah, one of the things I've heard over the years is addiction is isolation, and recovery is community. And I like little platitudes like that. I used to hate them, but they've come to be true. And I think one of the things that gets all recovering people and all people in general, we isolate. And you can be in a crowd of people and isolate. But when you watch like Wild Kingdom, I know you still watch that and you love it. Merle Perkins is your guy.
Yeah.
The lion that gets the antelope is the antelope that's out of the pack.
Right. Sorry. That wandered off.
Why am I laughing? I like antelopes.
Okay. Yeah.
Is it antelope or antelopes? I don't even know.
Yeah, you didn't do show prep, did you?
I never do show prep. Okay. I haven't done life prep. It's my problem. But we're going to talk about that this time.
All right.
I got you to laugh. That makes my whole week, Ryan, to make the comedian laugh. Now he's mad.
No, a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's get back into accountability, because it is very true. When you get isolated, that's exactly where Satan, I think, will want you to live in isolation. And to be alone with your thoughts and to not be reaching out to people in your community that can come alongside you and help you.
Yeah, it's well said. So if we get to the point, and we covered in the first part about how your addiction starts and really how you get off track as a Christian, how do we get back on track, Bill? And you bring up a really good point. I need to admit to myself and to another human being and to God the exact nature of my wrongs. And we're coming out of the 12 steps on this, which is step 5. But really what I need to do is, God, I need a lot of help. I can't do this. I don't want to do it. It's wrecking my life. I know it's out of control. It's not working, but it's my solution. I got to hit my knees and pray for the power to change it and pray for the power to think clearly. And I need to get into a group of people, Bill, that are already doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You might be going to church. You might be in a Bible study. But those aren't the right places for you to work on your addiction recovery. You need to be with like-minded people that are struggling with it, that have had some success. You don't need to reinvent the wheel here. What you do need to do is, for the first time in your life, get honest. And you need to pray to God to get honest, because we minimize, justify, and rationalize. You know, I don't really have that big a problem. I didn't, because I didn't drink more than many of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were alcoholics and addicts, too. And we thought we were cool. And God's got to intervene on that with the Holy Spirit to convict you, but also give you that hope that it's worth changing. And if you don't have that, the book of James says you don't have because you don't ask. And I really encourage you to try reading the Bible where you see where God is, but also where you are in that, because he's talking to you. I heard Tim Keller, and he's such a favorite of ours on Real Recovery, talking about sometime in your life, you're going to do something that you can't believe you did. And you're going, is my heart really that bad? Mm-hmm. Yeah, read in the Bible. The heart is evil. Who can understand it? And it's like we're shocked when we do that. I really encourage people to read the Bible and act on it as truth, because it is. And so when you see that, when you might read that apart from me, you can do nothing and no one is righteous and there's a way that seems right to man that ends in death, that's George. That's written right for me, the mocker and the fool. You gave a great lecture about 12 years ago at the Salvation Army about the mockers and fools in Proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the director at the time, and I'm sitting in the back. I got paid to listen to Bill Arnold, and I'm thinking, he's talking to the guys, but that's me. Mm. I don't like anybody telling me what to do. I want to run my own deal. And that's how I got into recovery, and that's how I got into Christianity. I don't think anybody wants God telling them what to do.
Mm. Well said, George.
I mean, isn't God's will easier to do when it lines up with yours?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. And so what we're looking at is we're in major trouble. The only one that can save us, and Bill, you talked about this one night many years ago at the Army about the Titanic, and I think it was in Ireland. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's a place in Ireland called Queensland. They now call it Cove Ireland, but it was the very, very last stop the Titanic made before its transatlantic voyage. And it dropped off about, I think, about 19 people, picked up a bunch of mail, and about another 180 to 100 people got on the ship that day. And it was the last time the Titanic was seen. And Cove was so small, Queensland was so small, the Titanic had to be, it couldn't get anywhere near the port. It had to, the boats would ferry out to the Titanic. But it was a very picturesque moment as I saw the old black and whites and thinking this was the last time that this was seen. And people getting on the boat that night or that day did not know in the course of the next three nights that boat would be broken in half and sinking to the bottom of the ocean. And everyone on that boat, in order to live, would have to be rescued. Now, many died that night, sadly, but the ones that survived because they were rescued. Nobody said, nah, I'm just going to swim to shore. I'm on my own. I'm good. No one. If you were going to live, you had to be rescued. And basically, we're all in open water. And if Jesus doesn't rescue us, we're in trouble.
How good is that? Isn't that good? I remember that from several years ago. And it was a message going, yeah, that's what happens to us. So if you're listening, what we're going to set up here for the rest of the show is you need someone to rescue you. And there's only one who can do that, and that is Jesus. And if you're thinking about it, the Holy Spirit's already working on you. Because whatever your problem, if it's an addiction, if it's a sinful behavior outside of God's will, you're not okay with doing it anymore, or you probably wouldn't even be listening to this show. And I take great encouragement that he who began a good work in you, and it starts with the fact for a lot of us, Bill, when we were still using, hey, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And I remember the last few times I did coke and drank, I would wind up talking about God. And at the time I thought, that's weird. But my heart was changing, and I knew there was something better than I was doing at the time. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because have great joy that God has initiated in something in you that only he could do. Because if you could quit, you already would have. And that'll take us to the step one when we come back.
I like that. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We're so glad that the Lord has led you to this episode tonight of the show. I know there's many realizing this is the message they need to hear tonight. So don't go anywhere. If you want to learn more about Faith Radio, you can ask for a welcome packet by going to myfaithradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery, Bill and George. George, great topic tonight. I appreciate the way you're leading us through this difficult discussion on accountability, because people don't want to do that. They want to do their own, they want their own plan. They don't want anyone telling them what to do. And it doesn't work for a lot of people. And that there's no negotiating with this plan, is there?
No, and I feel very hypocritical telling people that they should do what other people tell them to do, because I remember my dad told me when I was in my 20s, if I'd had a few drinks and there was a cop across the street, I'd go over and tell him what I thought about cops. And that's very true, and I'm embarrassed about that, but God changed that for me. And obviously I really respect what they do, and I'm ashamed of how I got to where I was. And I'm grateful that God took me out of it. But I want to talk a little bit, Bill, about how people that realize they have a problem, and maybe you're listening to the show because of that, or you know somebody, we kind of want to walk somebody through the process of how you get out of it. and it's a little different. But let's say that you decide you have a drinking problem and you pray to God and you're convinced that his will for you is to be sober. How do you go about that? Well, there's a lot of ways you can do it, but I think the best is to go to an accountability group that uses the 12 steps. And we start off basically that we admit we're powerless over drugs and alcohol, that our life's unmanageable. There's a lot to get out of that. What do you control? Absolutely nothing. God is sovereign. Your next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God, which takes you to step two, where you came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. You go, I'm not insane. Look at your life. Would a normal person do that? No. And part of our problem is we think normal is boring, so we want to be a little different. Well, anytime I go against God's will for me, I would say that's insane. The next step is we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. We understand him to be Jesus because Jesus said, John 14:6, I'm the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except through the Son. So to recap, the first three steps, Bill, I can't do it. He can't do it. I'm going to let him do it. We do a moral inventory of our resentment, fears, and sex conduct in four, and then we admit to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And as a Christian, we get forgiveness for our sins. You look at 1 John 1:9, if we're faithful to confess, he's faithful to forgive us. Then we take our 12-step book down and look at our defects of character. We write down selfishness, pride, ego, lust, greed. And then 7 is we humbly ask him to remove these shortcomings. Then at 8, we make a list of all the persons we had harmed. He came willing to make amends to them all. And 9, and you got to write these down. And there's a connection, Bill, with our brain when we write it down. I know for me, when I want to remember something, which is all the time now, if I write it down, it gets in there better. You make direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. That's a clause that's over-invoked. Very, very rarely are you going to injure somebody else. Then you've done the work, and now you need to enlarge that, and you continue to take your personal inventory, and when you're wrong, you promptly admit it. And as Dr. Glenn Pickering says, being wrong doesn't mean you're bad. It means you're wrong. So you don't have to rationalize, justify, minimize, and defend yourself. You just go, hey, I'm wrong. How can I make it right? Step 11 is the gold. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for his will for us and the power to carry that out. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. A lot of times what we use prayer for is our will for God and get him on board. Then step 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. If you haven't had a spiritual awakening, do the steps. God will work on your heart. We carried this message to other alcoholics and practiced these principles in all our affairs. You say, that's a tall order. It is, but with God, it's doable. On your part, it's not. So I worked as a counselor for a long time. Get guys in. They want to quit drinking. Well, I go to the scripture always, Bill. In Ephesians, it says you have to put off the old and put on to the new. And what I learned after being a counselor for a while in my own recovery, people are trying to do the wrong thing. I was a pitcher in baseball. My release point, my stride, everything can be good. But if the target's wrong, even if I execute perfectly, I'm going to miss. My point on that is this. Make a decision daily to quit drinking, and then you need to build your recovery. And most of my clients, including me, tried to quit drinking. That's an avoidance response. If any man be in Christ, 2 Corinthians 5:17, he's a new creation. So how do you do that? Well, here's how I would suggest you do it. I want you to get honest. Pray to God, give me the power to be honest. I'm not honest. I schmooze. I don't even know who I am. I'm in the book of James, a double-minded man who is unstable in all that he does, tossed about like waves on the ocean. My church guys, I'm this way. My business guys, I'm this way. And my party guys, I'm this way. And you lose your identity. I like to get high. I like to escape. I like to celebrate by using. I like stress reduction. Bill, I like the snappy patter of the locker room with guys, intimacy by insult. And I'm here to tell you, you need to get those things out of your recovery. And I always ask every one of my clients, what do you like about your using? I like the buzz. I like the escape. I like to feel numb. I like to celebrate, stress reduction, da-da-da-da-da. All things you should have in your life, all of them. They're not bad reasons to use. The problem is you're getting them from a counterfeit God that's always going to come up short. So what I think you need to do is write this list down and go, okay, if you're going to meet with George, George is going to say to you, did I just go third person like Herschel Walker? I did.
You did.
What I would say is I think you need to get out of your recovery what you were trying to get out of your using. How can you get high? Go work out. Go running. Do yoga. You need to expend that energy. How do you escape? Do you read books? Do you watch TV? Do you go to movies? Do you go to plays? What kind of music do you listen to? Do you listen to praise music? Do you listen to classical music? Something that uplifts you. It's mood changing. There's a thing called music therapy at the rehab center I go to. And this lady, Megan, helps guys with that because it gets you in a more godly state of mind. Stress reduction. Okay, that's a big one. I go to, once again, working out, going for a walk, doing something. Number four, how do you numb out? Well, you do all these things to do it. And what we know from our research is after 18 days of a habit, you create a new habit. And if you want to get the runner's high, which is the endorphins in your brain, do a 60% of your maximum heart rate walk for 42 minutes, and they'll release. So what happens is, and we're going to get a little clinical here. I can't go too far on that. But your pleasure pathways in your brain from using get lit up when you do cocaine, you have drinks, you watch pornography. So you're going to stop the drugs, the pornography, the stimulation. You need to develop new pleasure pathways in your brain. It's called neuroplasticity, easy for me to say. And Bill talks about fires together, wires together in your brain, and that's neuroplasticity. And how do you develop new pleasure centers in your brain and pathways? You got to go out and do something. And when you're using, all you have to do is pick up the chemical or watch porn, and it's done. You have to try at this. This is the first time in my life I ever tried, because my life depended on it. So does your eternal destiny. Jesus says you got to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. So the other thing, now we've got the physical thing that we're going to do. And the reason we do that, when we quit using, we're going to miss that unless we fill that. Remember in Ephesians, we put off the old, which most guys focus on. I'm not using anymore. You got to put on the new. And you might have to try some new things. I don't know. I wouldn't like that. Have you ever done it? No, I still won't like it. That was me.
Mm.
I remember the first time I went to yoga, I got done, and not the, you know, Tibetan Book of the Dead yoga. It was stretching and breathing. When I got done, I sat in my car for 5 minutes because I was too high. I couldn't drive. I thought, okay, we're adding this to the, I was, you know, 20 years sober. There's a book called Wild Heart by John Eldridge. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart, about worshiping God in everything you do. John Piper talks about Christian hedonism. Hedonism, pleasure. As a Christian, everything you do should be an act of worship. For me, working out, doing the show, Bible study, everything. Golf. So most guys' recovery is too boring. The biggest sin we do is bore people with the gospel. Jesus overcame death and sin, and he's on the cross, and people are jeering him, and he could have called all these angels and gone, done, I'm not doing it, and he didn't. So it's already done. And as Tim Keller says, if Romans 8:28 is right, that all things work together for good for those who are walking with God according to his purpose, it's already done. You can't mess this up. Believe me, I tried. So you start developing those activities, and you pray to God to get honest. This was a tough one for me. It still is. I'm a born liar. I'm a schmoozer. I'm a con guy. And the guy I conned was me. God, help me to be honest today. Anytime I tell a lie, I tell two lies because I tell myself it's okay to lie to you. And if you're an addict like I was, you lost your identity. You didn't know who you were because your whole life was a lie. Jesus said, I am the truth. read the Bible, start with the book of John every day. You can't do this, you don't want to do it, but you pray for the desire to do it, and he'll do it through you. And then you start looking at why you used all the lies you told. Well, it won't hurt if I have one. You don't want to have one. It will hurt. It's going to hurt you. It's a sin against God. And learning to tell yourself the truth. The other thing, Bill, you talk about there's you got to find new playmates, a new playground, and new playthings. There's places I don't go. The Bible tells us bad company corrupts good character. I had to get a new set of friends and a new teammates. This takes some effort, but it's worth it. And when you start getting some momentum, I know one thing that happened to me that's so weird. It took me 7 years to get a one-year medallion, and I was so proud, I got my medallion. And about 2 weeks later, a guy got his one-year medallion, and I felt almost as good for him as I did for me. And I thought, I better cut this short. What, am I going to shave my head and sell flowers at the airport in a month, But what it was is God was working in me. And if that's you, take great, great confidence that God is helping you. He's not mad at you. He loves you, and he's got a better plan for your life than anything you have. But you got to trust him enough to do it, and you got to work at it. You get up early. You get into the Word. Sure, you have coffee. It's drug-aided like me. Mm-hmm. If I didn't drink coffee, I don't think I'd ever read my Bible, honestly. But I do it, and I pray, help me. Keep me sober today. Give me the power, strength, and desire to stay sober, because I don't have it. And then you do your day. God, what would you have me do? And slowly this is going to happen. I look at it this way. When we were growing up, I grew up in the poor section of the town that I'm from, and we didn't have instant replay. I know, it was tough. And well, we'd always have a play in baseball that was too close to call. Every kid can relate to this. So what do? You do a do-over, right? And then that's the way God wanted the play. Everybody does that. Because otherwise, Larry would take the ball, Stevie'd take the bat, I'd take home plate, and the game's over. You got a do-over here. And Satan's going to tell you, you really messed up and you don't have any more. And you read in the book of Ephesians, the fiery darts of the enemy, powers and principalities we can't see, telling you, you did it. God doesn't love you. You're a phony. And you got to go to God and go, hey, help me do this. And then you put one foot in front of the other and you do it. And after a while you go, God's word is true. But you got to be with other people that are doing it, because you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Other people have done this. I like being around addicts and alcoholics because they're exciting guys, and there's a lot of laughter. You go to an accountability group. I want to use the text, the 12 steps, and I want to see how much laughter. Also, go to your same gender group, same sex group. I go to an all-men's group. It's all business, and I love the guys in my group. Something happens to my heart. We need to worship our way out of addiction for his glory and our joy, and the way you do that is by getting into action. And I got to learn to tell the truth with God's help. I had a lot more problems, and so do you, than just drinking. Your drinking is but a symptom of your self-centeredness, your self-seeking, and your egocentrism. You're being God in your own life. And the reason we're egomaniacs with inferiority complexes is we want to be our own God, and we know we don't have the game to do it. And God in his graciousness goes, okay, I'm going to tell you what to do. I wrote a book for you, and I'm going to bring some people into your life. And you're going to be open to them, and you're going to pray, and I'm going to do wonderful things that you can't believe. And that, my friend, is a thing you don't want to miss. We talk about all the time on this show. It's not about us getting recovered or recovering. It's God picking us up, forgiving us, helping us get sober, and going, hey, George, I got a job for you to do. Because the greatest thing in my life isn't that I'm sober. It's that I'm saved, and the King of the universe took what my sinful behavior and made it somewhat of a ministry for the last 30 years. And as I get to the end of my life, I thank God I didn't waste it. We used to talk about getting wasted. Well, you wind up wasting your whole life. And at the end, you go, God had this the whole time. And I don't want you to miss it. But as Glenn R. says, it's like the Wizard of Oz movie. It's black and white for a while, and then the color comes on. And I like that. What say you?
That's an award-winning
performance, George, really nicely done. I hung to every word you said. So thank you for being so raw and honest. And I know everyone is enjoying
those who are still awake, I'm sure.
Those who are still awake, I think, are very moved by what you shared. We're going to take a little break, come back. Lots more Road Recovery with Bill and George. Thanks for being with us. For joining us today on Real Recovery. If you missed any of this, you have to hear it from the beginning because George did an amazing job. I so appreciated what you did in the last segment, George. And let's say that you've had a series of sobriety, and then all of a sudden you find yourself relapsing. What does relapse mean, and how do you get out of that?
Wow, that's a great question. I think people use the phrase relapse wrong. And here's what I mean. I do it too. But relapse is really a process by which we return to chemical use. Chemical use is chemical use. And so relapse is a process, Bill. And the reason that's important is you can identify it and change it. How do you identify it? Well, you need to know what your relapse warning signs are, okay? And for a lot of us, it starts with isolation. I miss church. I'm not going to return that phone call. I'm going to watch TV. And so you're disconnecting from your social power source. And when you miss your daily prayer and Bible study, you disconnect from God.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe you become intolerant. You're driving down the street, and you think nobody can drive, and maybe you should quit your job and open that driving school, and you're taking everybody's inventory. And then you get kind of irritable, you know, and irresponsible. Maybe you don't open your mail. You throw the dishes in the sink. You don't make your bed in the morning. So you're intolerant. You're irritable. You're isolated. And you start taking inventory of everybody. Yeah, Bill does this, Ryan does this, this guy does this, nobody can drive. And what you're doing is moving yourself away. You become isolated. And you're putting yourself kind of like you're your own self-sufficient God. And then maybe you'll get insane thinking like, you know, I haven't had a drink in a year. I could drink again. And all of a sudden, maybe you stop going to your meetings, and the next thing you know, you're out, and somebody says, you want a drink? Yeah, yeah. And I've heard guys tell me they forget they're in recovery. Well, I don't know if that actually happens, but their recovery behavior, they're acting like they're not in recovery. And our blue textbook for the 12 steps talks about upon awakening, we turn our thoughts to God and what he would have us do that day. Not upon awakening, what am I going to do today? What's in it for me today? And I think really, Bill, the practice that we're doing, there was a little booklet I read. I think it was by a dishwashing priest in 1700 called Practicing the Presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read that?
Brother Lawrence.
Yeah. Brother Lawrence.
Yeah.
And that's really helpful in that all things, where do you see God? And one of the things that you've taught me is God is sovereign. Everybody you meet is a godly appointment. Treat it with respect. And after meeting me, I'm surprised you still use that one, but I get that. But really what you're doing is, God, what do you have for me today? I look at it as a former business guy. God's my employer.
Yeah.
What would you have me do today? And then I figure out, do my quiet time and what I'm going to, but the guys I work with, they get it going and then they kind of say with their actions, they'd never admit this. I'll take it from here, God. A guy I worked with at the University of Minnesota, Steve Casey, is probably the most brilliant relapse researcher I ever met. And he wrote a workbook called Missing Pieces. And usually what happens with guys, they fail to enlarge their faith, their walk, add to it. They fail to work with other people. And instead of reinventing the whole wheel, there's a missing piece. maybe going to that Bible study that you don't think you need, and people go, well, you know, I went. You got to go 4 or 5 times, really, to any group activity, church, anywhere, to get them. And you, if you drank, like I did, you'd go to a bar and go, you know, I don't like this bar, but you always finish your drink, and then you go find another one. If you're in recovery, your job is to find a church you like enough to go to every week, an accountability group that you do not miss. And if you do miss it, you go to another one that week. What we're doing is breaking patterns of behavior, Bill. We're transformed by the renewing of our mind, offering our body as a whole and living sacrifice out of the 12th chapter of Romans. If you're an addict, if you're an alcoholic, you're an all-in person. The only time you show any moderation at all is in your walk with God and your recovery. And this is an old country buffet. They probably have those all over the country. You're not taking a little of that. I'll have that. I don't want that. You got to be all in on this deal. You got to try. You got to work. And I think part of Christianity, Bill, I got a good friend who died a couple years ago who was a heavy alcoholic. He had 20 years of sobriety. And he said, I walk into this bar, and the bartender says, you want a drink? He goes, I'm not here to watch. I think a lot of Christians watch. We go to church and watch, might even have a cup of coffee during the service. We're at a Bible study. We want to be entertained with the choir, the preacher. I don't like that guy. He's not exciting. That's not what we're supposed to do. You got to get involved. And in the recovery community, serve people. Show up. Where do you need help? Do guys need rides? Set up chairs? You're not above that. Get in and join. And if you do go to an accountability group and they go out to eat afterwards, don't go, I don't want to be seen with these losers in public like I did. Go. Get to know them. You need new friends. And I think if you do that, if you're all the way in and you pray to God about something, hey, can you help me enjoy this more? He'll show up. But, Bill, I think you got to try. And we have non-negotiables. We talk about this, you and I, all the time. My praying before I get out of bed is not something I do when I feel like it. I do it every day. My quiet time is something I do every day, even when I don't want to do it. Working out, I never want to go, but I'm always glad I did after. And it's really about being true to God and to yourself. But you got to work at it. It's worth it.
Mm, so good. George, we just have about a minute left. I'd love for you to just take us through the Serenity Prayer. I hear that brought up often, and it seems to be a very powerful prayer that people pray. Would you take us through that in the remaining time we have?
Sure. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, there's a longer version than that, Bill, but I want to keep it simple. The acceptance, to accept things that I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I can't change other people, but I can change my attitude, my thoughts, my effort. And what I've learned, and I'm 66 years old, I go to God all the time now because I have a diminished capacity of what I was in my 30s, and I've failed more. God, help me is my favorite prayer.
Mm-hmm. So good, George. I so appreciate this is so helpful. And I the Serenity Prayer is something everyone should be knowing and reciting.
Especially those of us who golf.
Yeah, because courage to change the things that you can, right?
Yeah, I'm a lousy golfer. Yeah. But I really think that is to be still and know that I'm God. Psalm 46:10, that's what I get from that prayer.
Yeah, good job tonight, George. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Billy.
Thank you for joining us here on Real Recovery. If you think this episode would be helpful to a friend or loved one or someone that you know who's suffering, let them know. You can send that over via a text. Go to myfaithradio.com. We have the Real Recovery page. Have a wonderful evening. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.